Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC. Welcome back. White Noise by Pulitzer Prize winning playwright Susan Laurie Park features two couples, Ralph and Misha, and Leo and Dawn, four friends from college who hang out regularly at a local bowling alley, which one of them, Ralph, owns. He actually inherited a whole chain of bowling alleys, so this guy's got some deep pockets. He's played by Thomas Sadowski. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Whose thoughts about ownership become really dark as the play progresses. Here's how. It begins the day after an insomniac artist, Leo, played by David Diggs. Hi, David.
Hey there.
Is racially profiled and really roughed up by the cops. As a means of coping with the trauma, his perpetual inability to relax, Leo comes up with a radical and archaic idea. He asks his buddy Ralph to buy him, to own him, to enslave him. Leo wants to be Ralph's slave, which he sees as a form of protection and a way through his crisis of self. Here's a clip.
The promise of freedom is just some bullshit because the world don't support it. Black folks out here every day falling prey to the anger, to the unarticulated self-loathing, the unfathomable despair. So under the pressure, they go out and do a crime, and then they get locked up, and then what? They are slaves to the system. This is getting to me. I have got to take it somewhere.
As we learn, Ralph is all too happy to oblige. The unconscionable deal tests the group's friendship and reveals their real selves. Thomas Sadowski and David Diggs join me now. By the way, White Noise has just been extended to May 5th at the Public. Do you prefer Thomas or Tom?
Oh, you can call me Tommy. It's fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
Tommy.
Sure. None of the above.
Mr. Sadowski.
Yeah. Spelled Thomas but pronounced Sam.
David, when we meet Leo, where is he in his life? What's going on with Leo?
For all of the things, I think is a pretty successful person. He's, for the most part, like making it as an artist in a big city, as a visual artist. He's got great friends who he's had from college. He just has this one nagging problem that he hasn't been able to sleep for his whole life, really, since he was 5 years old. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't really a problem until his best friend Ralph got him a White Noise machine, and he was able to sleep for a little while but unable to make art. So he got rid of the White Noise machine, and now he can't sleep again, but he also can't make art. And that's sort of where he is when we meet him, and right after learning all of that about him, he gets roughed up by the police.
So when we meet Ralph, what's working for Ralph and what's not working for Ralph?
I think very little is working for Ralph when we meet him. And that's sort of the interesting thing about both of these characters is that we meet them both at a particularly low point in their lives. In as much as it would seem from the outside that a lot is working for Ralph, and which is a theme, you know, mm-hmm. which is something that is actually very much worth discussing, to him, Not much is working. He has complete lack of identity, and he has a complete lack of self ownership. Like mm-hmm. he just doesn't know who or what he is, or where and how he fits in. And he's having a crisis of personality. And I think that they both are having a significant crisis. These two best friends are having a significant crisis that intersects at the exact right/wrong moment, and launches us into this play, which takes us on quite a journey.
What did you think when you read that this character of Leo, that he wants to be enslaved, that he wants to be a slave to his best friend? Just David reading a script.
I mean, I think in lesser hands, I would have thought it was totally insane. The thing about Susan Laurie Parks is that these characters are so grounded and so real, and Leo's logic is fiercely sound in a lot of ways and actually resonated with me in a lot of ways. The particular way that Leo feels unsafe is not one that I'm unfamiliar with. Mm-hmm. And I understand the sort of spiraling that can happen out of that. I don't think I ever would have taken these steps myself, but I also don't have a friend like Ralph who I'm that close to who is in that particular position. So I don't know, you know, like in the clip that you played, I think the idea that the promise of freedom is a lie has occurred to me on many occasions. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the real brave things about all four characters in this play is that they undertake an examination of sort of the original American sin in a really profound way by, like, not ignoring it the way that all of us do in order to consider ourselves good people, but by saying that we're going to participate in it in order to really understand it and see what happens out of that. And so I don't know. I mean, I was, of course, sort of shocked. But behind the shock was so much sound reasoning that that's what kept me going through the rest of the play, and kept me sort of fascinated by the depths of understanding that all these characters were getting about themselves, but about each other, and then about our particular situation too.
Tom, what did you think when you read about the idea of a friend enslaving the other?
I didn't realize that we, writ large, capital W, Constitution, we, were having this discussion or capable of having this discussion, and certainly at this time or in this way. Mm-hmm. And it was absolutely rattling to the core. It shook me reading it, and it was thrilling artistically because, as I think all of us who stepped into that rehearsal room all sort of share this same kind of marrow in our bones, which is that we enjoy pushing and prodding and questioning, and you have to if you're going to do this play. You know, there's none of us are apologizing to this audience every night. In fact, I think that to a great degree, we're all sort of reveling in how much we can make people squirm and think and feel. And that definitely resonated with me immediately. I also thought it was probably the most important piece of American theater that I had read that had been written in like maybe the last 50 years. I mean, it's certainly one of them. It blew me away. And I was so honored to be considered to be a part of it that, I mean, there was really no other way to go except yes.
What aspect of it did you think was important?
Well, that idea that, you know, we are going to have this conversation in this way, completely bare knuckles, that we are going to lay this all out. Susan Laurie had talked about in a talk back that we did, she had talked about taking criticism for not being a pretty writer with this play, you know, that she was taking criticism from some critics that were saying, like, why can't you just be more of a pretty writer, go back to writing in your pretty poetry way again? And she said that she would sacrifice everything from her past in order to continue writing in this way if it meant that she could move the ball forward a little bit and didn't feel like being limited by these people. And I love that idea of we're going to peel back mm-hmm. the Band-Aid and look at this for real, and we're not going to pull any punches. We're going to talk about this openly, honestly, and we're going to get it all out on the table, and we're not going to answer any questions for you. We're going to lay it all bare, and then the next step is frankly yours.
My guests are Tom Sadowski and David Diggs. We're talking about White Noise, which is at the Public until May 5th. Can you guys feel the audience and their reaction? Because I saw it Saturday night, and there was a lady to my left who was sitting to the right and sitting to the left and leaning forward. She was in it, and it was really interesting. And this was a lady with nice flowing blonde hair, and she was really, like, just incensed and uncomfortable in a way that I hadn't really seen somebody sort of move around so much in the theater.
Yeah, we get a lot of that. I mean, the audience interaction in this show is the most fascinating part for me. part of the brilliant sort of design scheme of the show is keeping the lights on a lot of the time. So everybody has to deal with each other, and there's so much watching other people react. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of interesting negotiations happen. People watch the black people to see if this is funny or not, right? If there happen to be black people there, which it's a theater audience, sometimes there aren't, you know? And then what do we do? And so, and watching folks sort of negotiate with each other about what they're seeing in real time and looking to us for answers and us looking back to them for answers is a totally fascinating thing. You saw it on a great night. That Saturday night audience is sort of legendary for us because of how I don't know how it felt for you, but we talked about it at intermission. It felt to me like you guys bought in super hard. Like really quick and fell in love really fast and then were shattered at intermission. Which was like,
We were like, oh.
Sometimes it takes people longer to buy in, you know what I'm saying? So they don't get there till the second act, but y'all were all in real fast.
Real fast. And we were, I mean, we came upstairs at intermission and we were like, oh, these poor people.
They have, gonna get worse.
It's just going to get, this is going to be a bloodbath by the end. This is not going to be pretty. And it, I mean, it was that audience was, I mean, you guys were tremendous. That was
one of our favorites. And yeah, it's weird, you don't always rate audiences like that.
No,
and normally there are beats in a show where you know what's going to happen.
Right.
This is where a laugh comes, this is where people are shocked. It's never the same in this show, so you can actually parse audiences apart like that.
Yeah.
What's been the toughest part of the show for you or line to say?
Oh man.
You have more to choose from.
Oh man, you know, it. That's it's interesting. I would say that for me, the trickiest part. And I don't know, man. What do you got? Let me think about this.
I
for
mean,
a second.
I think the. The hardest part for me is the there's a connection between the emotional stuff that we go through and my body, which I don't think I was aware of. So like wearing slavery on you 8 times a week, like turns out hurts. Like I am in physical pain more than I have been in any show I've ever done, and I didn't think it was that kind of athletic show. But it's about where you hold tension and about, you know, the different ways that participating in this actually have physical effects, which has been really interesting to think about. The hardest lines to say have always, and I don't know that I've figured it out yet. There's towards the end of the show, there's a scene with Leo and Misha. And Leo is sort of rattling off the feelings he's feeling instead of thinking he's feeling them. I started feeling my feelings instead of just thinking I'm feeling my feelings, you know. She says, what feelings? And he says, I don't know, you know, just the dawn of time, the mother continent, the parade of history, the daily tide of injustice, the sacrifices, the hopes, the dreams, the rage, the despair, the need to jump ship instead of living enslaved. He's rattling off all of these things. I, David, am a very heady person. And so for a long time, that section for me was about trying to draw the connections between all of these things. Mm-hmm. And a brilliant note that our director, Oscar Eustace, gave me one time was like, he's not thinking, he's feeling. And so what happens if you stop worrying about the timing of this necessarily and making the logical connections and actually invest in each of these things separately? And so that's what I've been playing with for a little while, and it's been revelatory for me, even though it makes probably little difference to anybody out there.
But I just love that scene, though, man. It's so, I mean, I think it's just, I remember when you made that, when you came into rehearsal and you made that switch, and you said, this is what I think I'm going to try in this scene. And, like, the dividends that it paid immediately, it was just, like, breathtaking. And it is. Every night, I mean, I sit backstage and I listen to that, and I'm just, like, completely enthralled. I love it. I love it.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, bro.
You got a minute and 30 seconds to figure out an answer, Tom.
Okay. it goes something like this. I think that in the core of us as human beings, there is this idea that we want to not be loathed, mm-hmm. right? And we want to make things okay for people. We want to make things a little bit easier for people. And the struggle for me has been in not allowing myself to take the edge off of this character or what he does or what he says every night.
Keeping him fully repugnant towards
keeping the end. Keeping him fully what he is, you know? And you
which
see
is
him
to
as
to me repugnant. Correct.
Right.
I got you, man. Right. I got you.
And I don't get to have that judgment yet. But doing that, yeah.
Well, if you want to see some good acting and have your mind a little bit blown, go see White Noise at the Public. It runs through May 5th. Tom Sadowski and David Diggs. Thanks for coming to the studio, guys.
Thank you.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. I will meet you back here tomorrow.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.